Blog Talk Radio.
This evening, welcome to Black Wealth Creation Radio. I thought I'd just give you a little extended version, a little more funk for your Tuesday night. Hope you appreciate that. I am here with my co-host and one of my favorite people in the world, Louisa Sanderson, and just hanging out with her on this Tuesday night is going to be a fantastic show. It always is when I get a chance to spend some time with her. So I am just excited. I'm excited about the rain being gone for a little bit. There's no ice on the ground, and I feel so bad saying that because I'm here in Texas, and I think we had like 2 days of ice, and people are already crying about it. And people on the East Coast are like, please stop that. And so, but it's been nice. It's been like spring weather, so I've just been enjoying it. But hey, how is everything going? And let me bring my co-host on, the hostess with the mostest. Louisa, how are you doing, dear?
Hey, Sean, I'm good, and I'm gonna clear the air right now. I'm from the East Coast. Spent 18 years of my life there. Lived 4 years in North Dakota. I've had enough snow for the rest of my life, so I don't care if we get a day of. I don't care if we get a half an hour of ice. That's too much ice for Texas. And I'm gonna brag. We had 80 degrees today. I love it.
80 degrees.
The dog and I walked for about an hour. We basked. We got a little more chocolatey. So I love it. And I'm sad that tomorrow we're gonna be back in the 60s. But Sean, you live in Texas. Take advantage of your bragging rights to warm weather. Don't let somebody let you feel bad that you live in Texas. But I am excited about tonight's show because I think it's going to be a doozy because we could hurt some feelings here. The subject affects me personally, so I'm waiting to see what our expert has to say. It should be an interesting show, to say the least.
It should, and I am so looking forward to this one. You know, we had her on a little while ago, and I could not believe, you know, just, and this is one of your friends, and it was just as a guest, and we were just, you know how our nonprofits are. They're so nice and cute and cuddly, and they tell us about the little programs, and you know, it was just so friendly, and everything's so nice. And then she came on, and it was just, Leah dropped this bomb. I was like, whoa. We've got to have her back. We've got
yes,
to.
Yes.
You cannot just say that and walk off.
Yes. Well, you know, and hers isn't, she, remember, she was one of our business of the week. She was a business. She was a nonprofit.
Oh,
but
okay.
She is,
that's
she,
right.
But she does have that presentation. She comes, she's a nice little fluffy kitten on the outside, and then that lion, she'll let that lion roar. So hopefully she doesn't hurt too many feelings because I know she will tell it like it is.
And that's what we want, of course. You know, we're never afraid to, as you say, tell it like it is. And we wanted, this is going to be a special show, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that towards the end of the show. But we're not going to have any business of the week. We're not going to have any nonprofit because this was such a hot topic. We wanted to really, really kind of set aside some time. I mean, I myself don't have any children, but Louisa, I know you do. And I know there's nothing more important to you than making sure that your kids are prepared and they have the best chance at being successful in whatever they choose to do. You know, so I know that's really, really near and dear to your heart.
Yes. And, you know, as as a parent, you want to make sure that you're doing everything that you possibly can for your children. And, of course, you know, they don't come with owner's manuals. There's no instructions from God on what you're supposed to do. So you're winging it, you know, and I don't care how many you have, if it's your first, whether it's your second or third. I only have two myself, but every child is different. So you never know exactly how to operate that kid, so to speak. So it is something that for me as a parent, doing as much as I can and hoping I'm doing the right thing and I'm not breaking a future member of society is very important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And before we get to our wonderful guest, because I don't want to hesitate too much longer from bringing her on, I just want to let you know that this show is sponsored by GettingSkinnyAndWealthy.com. And I have been on a personal journey this year of getting healthier, and I have been able to lose 49 pounds in 45 days. So that's my testimony, and I'm sticking to it. And that is my passion now, to help everyone that wants to get healthier and lose weight. That's what I'm about, and that's what I'm really enjoying, and I'm looking forward to helping people do that with their lives, because I know the challenge. I know how tough it can be. So just get in touch with me if you want to know more. That is www.gettingskinnyandwealthy.com, or you can reach me at SeanHI77@yahoo.com, and I will be happy to get you some more information. Of course, we can never forget MindYourBlackBusiness.com. So, Louisa, could you tell us a little bit about that, about your business?
Well, as hopefully as everybody knows by now, MindYourBlackBusiness.com is a platform and a community that I created for and about small black business and the black business community. We are always looking to share other people's experiences. If you're a business owner or a nonprofit founder and you want to share your experience, please go onto the website, mindyourblackbusiness.com. Send us a note. If you have a passion for a certain topic, if you're an expert in it in a field that could help people with their business, go onto the website and let us know. We're waiting to hear from you, and we're looking to have as many people join the community as possible.
Absolutely, and I love that community. Well, you know, without any further ado, let's get to our wonderful guest. I mean, the phone lines are already lighting up. Of course, the call-in number is 347-850-8677. If you want to get on and have a special voice, just press that one button, and we're going to get you right on. But, of course, all you have to do is start talking about people's kids, and you're definitely going to get some people interested. And tonight is no exception. We're going to have this Jasmine Peters on tonight. She's a published author, motivational speaker, and holistic parenting life coach, and she's the founder of Parenting Wellness Center. And I'm not going to steal any of her thunder. I'm going to let her tell you more about her and what she does and how she does it. Jasmine, are you there?
I am. How are you?
I am wonderfully blessed. How are you this evening?
I am well. Thank you for asking.
That is great. That is great. Well, Jeff, could you tell us a little? I gave the big 3,000-foot overview of you, big picture. Could you tell us a little bit more, kind of fill in the blanks about what you are and what you do and a little bit of your history?
Sure. Again, well, first I'd like to thank you, Sean and Louisa, for having me on again. So thank you very much for providing this platform for me. As Sean said, my name is Jasmine Peters. I'm the founder of Parenting Wellness Center. I'm also a holistic parenting life coach. My organization was founded in 2011. We're a twofold organization. The first fold focuses on the health of the parent, promoting self-care of mind, body, and spirit. We address the needs that directly affect the parent: money management, time management, co-parenting, setting and accomplishing goals. And then the second fold of the organization focuses on creating and nurturing parent-child relationships. So topics include responsible communication, getting your child ahead in school. Sorry, I'm running everything through my head. Getting your child ahead in school, redirecting imperfect behavior, And so those are just a few topics that we focus on. We offer teleclasses. We offer one free monthly teleclass on various topics. And then we offer Facebook support groups, webinars, and in group and one-on-one sessions.
Wow, that is so fantastic. You know, and as Louisa said earlier, you know, kids don't come with instruction manuals. You know, we go to, 12 years of school to learn how to do certain things. And then some of us go to another 4 years in college to get a degree and a certain skill. But to me, one of the most important skills that we could ever have, parenting, we just either have to look to the media, we have to look to our parents, and hopefully we had some good examples, but many of us didn't. Let's just be honest. We don't call it what it is. Many of us didn't, and they did the best that they could. They did the best with what they had, but, you know, it's not like they had probably the best of examples. And so to have a service like yours where you can really reach out to people and kind of give them that extra little information, that extra little push, and that you make everything so available, I love that. And if you could, and we're going to do it again later, but I know some people may get on and may have to get off, and I don't want to push everything to the end. Could you tell us how, if people want to know more about you, where can they find you and how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. My website is www.parentingwellnesscenter.com. I have a Facebook page, Parenting Wellness Center, or you can call me for a free 15-minute consultation at 720-343-9081.
All right. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's jump right in, and let's get into some discussion. As we're talking about parenting, and I really think in today's society it's probably been more tougher than any we can imagine. You know, back when I was growing up, we didn't even have the internet. I know I'm an old dinosaur. I know it sounds like, but it really wasn't that long ago, kid. I mean, it really wasn't. But, you know, we didn't have the internet. We just went outside and played, and life was a little bit more simple. Now with the access that kids have, and I mean, my gosh, we just talk about bullying, just one little facet. That at least, I think I was watching someone say, at least back in my day, you know, the bullying would stop once I left school. But now you can go online. My goodness, you can be on Facebook, Twitter, and just so many different challenges. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like and what challenges parents are facing in these new times?
Yeah, well, technology has definitely taken over, and it has its advantages and disadvantages. You know, as you said, Facebook, a lot of kiddos are creating Facebook accounts, although Facebook has its rules and regulations. You know, parents aren't really monitoring children creating Facebook accounts. They can create them at school, friends' homes. And it opens up the door for bullying and cyberbullying that can roll over physically into the educational system. That we're just not adequately prepared for. There's also different websites where you can go in anonymous and do bullying, and so the rise of suicide among our youth is rising. But at the same time, there are support groups and different organizations on Facebook that do support our children and the parents to allow them to converse with each other, you know, take advantage of, you know, missing homework assignments. So it has its advantages and disadvantages if adequately and responsibly used, but the responsibility really falls on, you know, the parents being diligent in watching and caring for, you know, their kids.
And when, as you consult with some of your parents, what are some of the things that you're seeing that's kind of being a trend, or maybe some consistent mistakes or missteps that they're making?
As far as the technology piece?
Well, really just, I mean, technology is just one thing, but and we can certainly talk about that that part, but really just anything that's maybe major, or I know technology is a huge one, but anything else that may be a major miss that they may be overlooking?
I think the main key is communication. You know, as our kiddos are young, we talk to them a lot, or we talk at them a lot. And as they get older and more self-sufficient, that communication, it dies down. You know, they get new friends or, you know, want to start going out more. And so we just stop doing what we did in the beginning when we first had them. And so that breakdown in communication with our children definitely can create a wedge in the long run in how we, you know, create healthy or nurture and support relationships between them. And I'm guilty of it.
Well, I think we all are. I think we can all improve our communication skills. And even as a husband, as adults, I'm challenged a lot of times. And I know for an adult talking to a child and all that they're coming through, I know that can be extremely difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I think what we tend to do is we fail to realize that our children are little people, too. So some of the mm-hmm. things that we say to them or the way we talk to them, I guarantee you if it was an adult-to-adult conversation, we wouldn't tolerate, you know, how we're spoken to. But we do talk to our children that way. And so if we can accept that our children are little people too and have conversations with them and allow them to have a voice for themselves and show them how to communicate responsibly, that would definitely help in nurturing the relationship.
Jasmine, when you talk about the communication and showing children how to communicate responsibly and parents communicating responsibly with kids, how because adults have a hard time communicating responsibly. I think that's a whole other show in and of itself. So what are some tips or some things that you can give parents, especially, but even adults in general, when it comes to interacting with kids? Because even though some of us don't have kids, we have nephews, we have nieces, or they're school teachers. And I know, God bless the school teachers, but some of them could use a lesson in communication with children. But what are some tips that we as adults could reflect on when we are communicating with kids? Because as a parent myself, I know that I have to do some self-check if I've had a stressful day, you know, and I have to mm-hmm. think about that. But then another problem that I have is even I'm pretty active in my daughter's school, and when my son was in school was active when he was in school, I watch how the kids are interacting with the teachers, and it's nowhere near the respect level that is expected of, I know, my children at home. The kids go to school, and I think they almost think that teachers and administrators are their friends, because it is a lot more lax. So as adults, I guess, how can we kind of self-check ourselves to make sure that we are instilling certain values of communication with the kids? But then, and I guess it's also a two-part question. As a parent, how do you combat the fact that your child has this, to me, what is a skewed vision of what's okay and what's not okay compared to, you know, what the world's presenting and what you're presenting at home?
Well, I think the first thing that we do when we're talking to our kids is give them our undivided attention. Again, I've been really guilty of, like, talking on the phone and, okay, I'll talk to you later, and really dismissing them. It's important to just stop what you're doing if you can and give them your undivided attention when talking to them. If you cannot give them your undivided attention, then, you know, explain to them versus shush them on the phone, you know, just say, hey, mommy's on the phone, and give them, if you can, a time frame as to when you'll be off the phone. or I'm taking care of business. But while you're talking to them, one, the undivided attention. Two, I think it's important to validate them or acknowledge them, meaning you repeat back to them what they said to you in your own words. So that will help allow them to clarify or confirm that you heard what they were saying. And if they need to clarify, that's an opportunity for them to clarify. If you did hear it right, then yes, you know, and the conversation continues. After that clarification is validation. So if they're feeling bad, you know, acknowledge their feelings, whether we think it's petty or wrong or we don't agree with how they're feeling, it's still their feelings. Their feelings are real, so we need to acknowledge their feelings. Example, you know, it sounds like you're really sad, and I'm sorry for your sadness, and what can I do? So offer some type of resolution for them or advice, because you may not be able to resolve every situation, but you can offer support and advice to them. I agree with you. The kids are, they have this, my friend says entitlement, and she's absolutely right. The kids are starting to come across as they're entitled to things, and which really messes with their interpretation of how they think they can talk to people, especially in the school system. And so I think it's important to empower teachers as well as the kiddos and explain to them, okay, this is, you cannot talk to me this way, and here is why. We're so quick to write a referral for, you know, being disrespectful or talking back or disobedient, instead of explaining to the kids what they did wrong, why it is deemed wrong, and giving them an opportunity to correct their behavior by telling them what they can do differently.
Right. So in addition to that, what can we as parents do to kind of reinforce or even correct certain behaviors that the kids either pick up while at school, whether it's the interaction with the teachers or what they pick up from their peers? How do we maintain that balance? Because I realize that, you know, my daughter, and I'm going to speak of her because she's the one that I have left at home. I realize that she has her own identity, she has her own personality, and she's going to interact in a certain manner that's conducive to that environment. But at the same time, I also know that certain things that are allowed in school are not necessarily allowed in the real world, and they could develop into bad habits or things that aren't necessarily great for her when she goes to apply, you know, go to college, maybe apply for her first job and build a business, whatever. So how do we reinforce what we're doing at home without disrupting their own development?
By empowering them, having a conversation with them, asking them if they think that's okay for them to do. You want to find out their thinking. You know, like I tell you, Lisa, when we talk, there's a method to my madness. So it's important to find out, why do you think that this is okay? And empower them on how they can do things differently and why it's not okay. That's the short answer.
I guess I realize I'm pretty sure that I know.
Does that clarify it for you?
It does, and that's kind of what we try to do at home. Is we try to make sure that her stands, and even when my son was younger, of course, we try to make sure that we understand why she's doing what she's doing, so that we can correct it. Or maybe even our thoughts and our approach needs to be manipulated a little bit. So I totally get that. But what about, let me just get to the heart of it. What about when your kid is just totally and out of line, and you know, up and down? How do you handle that? What do you do when you send April or whoever out into the world, and then you bring, when they come back home from school, you have this demon because they've been in an environment. And I'm not speaking from personal experience, just so you all know, my daughter's name isn't April or demon. but how do parents deal with that? How do you, when it's something that's repetitive, because kids will, you know, if you're in that environment, I know even as an adult, if I'm in an environment all day long, and you slip into that, into what's cool, what's okay. But then when you come out of it, you have to kind of change, code. How do we get that to change? How do parents successfully get that behavior to change? Because, and this is when you've covered all the bases. This is when you've already addressed it from their perspective. But it's just a matter of that. To me, it's that behavioral change and getting the child to understand that. How do we get the kids to know that we're right?
Well, you know, honestly, I personally have experienced that and currently experience that, and I can tell you as a parent, you need to understand the different stages of parenting. You know, where their teacher, where their leader, and then where their guide. So depending on where they are in that stage, you know, I have my children range from 19 to 11. So I'm in the leader and guide and supportive position in their life as a parent. One thing in looking back and some of the things that I've been through is trying to understand why they're doing what they do. I mean, is there self-esteem issues? How does it make them feel? You know, if they're just out of control, are they missing something? Louisa. There's always a reason why they do what they do, and I think that through maybe our lack of patience that we don't take the time to really understand exactly what's going on. Peer pressure is, as you know, very, very influential. It's very stressful for kids to go through. Even adults, you know, experience peer pressure. So all you can do is... I would encourage you to keep talking to them and allow them. Sometimes kids do have to fall. And in the leader support guide that I'm in right now, I'm in a really tough position. And I have to let him make it. My oldest boy is the one I'm talking about. I have to let him make his decisions. And when and if he chooses to come to me, then be supportive and offer my advice if petitioned. And then let them make a decision from there. So some things you just can't fix. You know, you just have to understand your role and stay in your lane.
Okay. Well, I want to switch gears on you real quick, and I want to, because we've been talking kind of general about parenting, and I think what we're talking about fits all parents, but we're talking about Black folks on this show, and. One thing, I live in a very, I call it a utopic area. Where my kids go to school is pretty diverse. I kind of equate some of the moms to the Stepford Wives. You know, they're very, 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 you have some, they their career has been PTA, PTO, volunteering, all that good stuff, which I think is great. You see it, you see the positive effects and how the children perform and how the school performs and the different things that the schools have, because you have these parents who come together and they've created this network of fundraising and all this great stuff. However, having grown up in a school myself where the demographic was predominantly Black or minority children, having been exposed to those schools even as an adult, you don't necessarily see that same click. You don't see that same work together attitude when you're in predominantly Black schools. Why is that? Even the schools that, as my children have gone to school, we have a it's not a great number of black parents, but we have families within the area. It's growing. But even now, you don't see as many black parents at the PTA meetings. You don't see as many black parents in the classroom volunteering. And then we wonder what's wrong with our children. Where are all the black parents? And why aren't they participating? What is your thought on that?
That's a great question, and I actually posed that question on my Facebook page, and I've had the opportunity to do a couple of pilot programs to see where our black parents are and why aren't they participating. And, you know, a lot of the feedback that I received was that, you know, their hours, some work full-time, some work multiple jobs, some are in school. The flexibility or the lack thereof is just not there, you know, during the PTO meetings. You know, as I can speak personally, I'm very involved in my kids' school, but I will say as a mother of five kids at five different schools, it gets very exhausting to come home from work and then put your clothes back on to go out. But to me, there's really no excuse for, and I don't have a solid answer, unfortunately, as to why these, our black parents are not participating. A lot of things start at the top. So there's a lot of politics and red tape. And as you know, things roll downhill. So the parents feel that. Some of it is rebellion against the school. And instead of switching the kiddos to a different school or whatever, they just don't show up.
So, and you know, I'm kind of with you on it with where parents have, you know, there's busyness. There is even as a parent and a very proactive and interactive parent myself, I did notice, or I've noticed that a lot of the, you know, you end up with these cliques, and the schools are catering to certain demographics, you know, certain whatever, the, you know, certain groups, parents, whatever it is. But at the same time, I'm very opinionated on it because that didn't keep me from participating in my children's school. That didn't keep me from being active and going on field trips. And at one point I went to school, I worked full time. You know, so I feel their woes as that goes, but it still shouldn't hinder parents. How do we get them to understand the importance, or what can we do to ease those woes, or you know, to make them, give them a reason, or to maybe give them a more comfortable avenue to be more proactive? Because these little people, as you call them, or you know, these young adults, as they get older, are going to be our future. And I've seen what the effects of the lack of parenting. I call it poor parenting. You're a victim of poor parenting. But I've seen what that does to kids. You know, because you as a child, you see, well, so and so's mom is always on the field trip. My mom can never go on the field trip. So we never go to the school night. How do we get parents to understand how important it is, and what can we do to make it easier for them?
You know, I'm with you. I'm a no-excuse kind of person. And so there's a lot of things that we can do to get involved. The first thing is when you find out your child's schedule, you can email the teacher and introduce yourself. That will definitely show that you have an interest, you know, in ensuring your child's successful education. You can schedule, you know, you may not be able to make parent-teacher night, but they have a calendar that's open. You know, look at your calendar and see when you're available. I don't think it hurts for parents to take some time off of work to attend a field trip. Sometimes it's not possible. But still communicating, staying in constant communication with the teachers creating that relationship really early on, well before parent-teacher night or before the child is in trouble or, you know, things like that. Offer ideas and suggestions to the classroom or to the school of what you would like to see to get more involved. You know, I would suggest, you know, if you can't get involved physically, see if they, most schools nowadays, they have a website. The teachers have their own website. A lot of schools are going on Facebook. So there are definitely ways to get involved. Even if you can't physically be there, there still should be some type of parental presence, whether it be phone or whatever. I was definitely challenged in attending my children's field trips. There were some times where I could make adjustments when I was working in corporate, and then there were other times where I could not. But I definitely articulated that to the teacher, and I also, you know, explained to my children when they were younger that mommy can't make it, but here's what I can do, or come up with a plan with them to show that I'm still supporting them. So there are ways to stay involved, even if you cannot be physically present.
Okay, I'm just gonna ask, defer to Sean really quickly. Sean, as an HR manager and somebody who works in a call center, so I know you have to have at least a good number of parents. What are your views, or what are even in reference to your job or in your personal views? How do you make accommodations, or does your company make accommodations for parents when they want to be more involved in their children's schooling? I know a lot of corporations make accommodations if you want to volunteer with the Red Cross or the Humane Society. Is that same accommodation made to parents who just want to be more involved with their children's schooling and their activities?
Well, you know, every company is different. And, you know, the one I work for, you know, it's a lot, you know, hey, great company, I think it's great. But as far as just specific things that would be beneficial to have a work day or have a day where you would go and visit with the kids at their school, there's nothing set like that. Now, there's a different kind of program. It's called Junior Achievement. Now, if you were just lucky enough and they happened to pick your school, that would be wonderful. But, boy, I tell you, I'm going to try not to get myself fired and get myself in too much trouble. The thing about it is that, let's say, for instance, they have already a relationship with School A. And so they will allow parents and people, not just parents, but anybody within reason to go to School A and volunteer in J in a day and do those things. But if they don't have a relationship with School B, and maybe your child happens to go to School B, if you wanted to do that same thing, you would have to take time off. And, you know, you get into the whole, you know, work-life balance. And I think a lot of times we say that and we preach a good game, but then on the same, and it works, and you're an entrepreneur, so it works for entrepreneurs just as well because, you know, hey, we all, and I've seen the post and I know the people who have, you know, 12, 14, 16-hour days, and yes, you have to have that, and there's a certain degree that you have to do that, but at the same time, when you're working those, you know, team no sleep and team all night, and you're doing all those type of things that are really important and they should be done to a certain degree, where is that child at? And where is that child? So I don't want to beat up on corporate America totally, but we definitely could do more. But then for our entrepreneurs who are having it tough and they're having to do it on their own, those are the ones that really, really, and you're in this boat, you can actually absolutely speak to this. I think those are the ones that really have that challenge because there is no backup. You are the go-to person. You know, if you don't make it happen, you know, it's literally, hey, if mom doesn't work, if dad doesn't work, the kids don't eat. And so I'm kind of, you know, kind of push that back to you and say, how do you find that balance and how do you make that work when it falls on you?
You know what? For me, I'm a little bit of a different monster. I'm not your type A entrepreneur. I can be very, very laid back. I'm very diligent about what I do, but within that, I'm very diligent to include family and home. I have two calendars. I have a personal calendar and I have my business calendar, but they're both merged. So any activity that is on that merged calendar is just as important as the next. And I make sure that, for like my daughter, I have a standing calendar. I've got to go pick her up at a certain time every day, or doctor's appointments, whatever. That all goes on there. She has the liberty of posting any of her activities on my calendar so that they're already there. And for me, I've learned to work around what's necessary for home, because if home's broken, everything else is broken to me. If my daughter's unhappy, then that's just going to equal in splendor and so many more problems. And I'm pretty sure Jasmine can speak to this, especially dealing with five children. That's an even larger calendar. But I really am about making sure that I'm there for her. And she understands that there's certain things that I can't be there for. She also understands that if you don't put it on the calendar, if you put it on the calendar in enough time, and enough time means not the night before, even if I have something that is already on there, I'll do my best to make sure that I can be there. But I also explain to her that there's some things that mom just can't. I can't adjust. I also have the luxury of her dad's also there too, so we can split that if necessary. But for me, that was part of why I became a business person. I started my own business, became an entrepreneur, because it gave me that flexibility, because I was in that job where it didn't matter if you just put in 14 hours the day before. You still need to come, bleed for at least 8 hours the next day. There was no understanding and the whole flex time. Flex time was for their benefit. So, and that's how it's been for many of the jobs that I've worked, with the exception of a few. So I personally try to make sure that I make that time for her. But and she's older now, so she understands that sometimes mom just can't do certain things. Sometimes we just can't be there. But from my perspective, just seeing a lot of parents cries, I wonder how much they actually prioritize it, and I wonder how much they understand the importance of a football game, of a basketball game, of just being there. And I know if you work a job, it can be a hard thing, because especially if you're the breadwinner. And I know that it's hard to balance. Okay, what's more important, making sure we eat next week, or making sure I can go eat lunch with her tomorrow? So, that can be a daunting task. And I wish companies would understand. And I know that there's some companies that do, and they implement that, and whether they're smaller companies or larger, or your Google, but I wish companies would understand just how much more beneficial their workers would be to them if they offered that type of flexibility. Because that's as a parent, that is the most strenuous thing I've had to deal with, was like, okay, I got to get the kids to the dentist, but at the same time, I got to go to meet the teacher night, and all these things are snowballing into one day or one week. And to get that side eye, like, didn't you just take off the other day, it really makes you rethink life. Like, do I really need this job? There were times, I was like, well, how much vacation time do I have saved up? We have to think things like that. So for me, it's that, regardless of what I am, what I'm in as far as a business or a job or whatever station in life I'm in, she and my oldest were what was important. But I do know that it's not like that for everyone. And I'm going to defer to Jasmine. How have you, and I know you touched on this already, but how do you manage? What has been your biggest or your most helpful tool or mantra? What keeps you sane when you're trying to be mom for all five of yours?
That's actually a great question, Melissa, because I have ran myself literally into the ground and fell ill trying to, carry that S on my chest. And finally, I had to rip it off and let the kids know, you know what? Mommy is human. I am exhausted, and y'all are wearing me thin, because everyone was in a different sport. Everyone had different events.
And so what has helped me is definitely a calendar. We definitely keep a family calendar, paper, and use Cozy Calendar, which I've installed on all the kids' phones so I know and they know what's going on. If they want to do extracurricular activities, I have empowered them to find rides, and I will talk to the parents, you know, to make sure that it's okay for them to have a ride and, you know, create a healthy relationship with that parent. And if they're not able to find rides, then it's just not going to happen. Maybe we'll do another sport another time, because I can't be everything to everyone at the same time. It's just not possible. And I've challenged my health in trying to do so. And then, you know, parent-teacher nights, they're in two different school districts. And so sometimes parent-teacher nights run the same day. But because I already have a relationship with the teacher, and I talk to my children's teachers once a week for sure, if not more, if I need to. So I can't say that parent-teacher night is a priority of mine simply because I already have that relationship. I know what's going on in, you know, in their curriculum and where I need to help. And I'm physically up there at least once a week as well. So those are the things that I have done, and they currently work for me. Some days are more challenging than others, you know, when there's hiccups at school, but for the most part, that is what works for me and my kids, and they're still, you know, very active in sports and what they want to do and have time for friends, and mommy is having time to work and create time for myself to rest.
Okay. Well, I want to switch gears again on you. Sorry, Sean put me in charge tonight, so I get to play. I want to get a little controversial, and I'm gonna try to put myself out there first, so people get mad at me, and hopefully people get mad at me before they get mad at the guest. But over the last year, especially, we've had a lot of our black men and our black young men and even our black boys who have been gunned down, choked down. We've lost a lot of them, you know, and then it's never stopped. But, you know, the Michael Brown case was, of course, been the one at the top of everybody's mind, especially the way everything was handled. Mm-hmm. One thing that the media tried to really push out there was his background. You know, he was a bully. He had just been caught on camera with another person who they had basically bullied this store owner and robbed them. You know, his background as far as drugs and all that horrific stuff. As far as the case goes, my opinion is good, bad, or indifferent. However this young man was, that had nothing to do with what happened to him. However, as a parent, I wonder if he hadn't been in that predicament, if he hadn't just come from that store and having done possible.
Marisa, you cut out.
Can you hear me?
Hadn't he been at that store?
I can hear you now.
Okay, I'm sorry, Sprint. Throw
him under the bus.
We'll never get Sprint to sponsor us now. But if
no, we that ship has sailed.
if Michael Brown had had some different tools, if he had been maybe taught to react differently or to whatever when approached by the officer. Regardless of the officer's actions, is there something that we as parents can do, especially to teach our young boys and our young men when it comes to interaction with authority figures, with police officers, even teachers on a younger level, you know, even on a more daily level? But what can we tell them? And even our girls too, because that's one thing I fear. My son is 18, and it's, you know, these it seems like it's open season on black men and black boys. How can we as parents protect them? I guess that's really the heart of the question, because there are some things that are construed as being our men and our boys are construed as being aggressive and all these other negative traits. And I know that it's not like that. I know that there are things that they're going through, but also know that it's just not like that. So what can we do as parents to protect our boys and our young men? What do we need to tell them when it comes to situations like Michael Brown, or even just more daily situations dealing with people of any type of authority?
Well, that's another great question. We don't know the upbringing, you know, of Mike Brown. And as parents, we can talk till we're blue in the face, and our kids still make their own decisions. I don't by any means point my finger at the parents at all, simply because, you know, one, I don't know the situation or his upbringing. Two, we can, like I said before, we can tell them anything. You know, of course, when you're approached by the police, you stop, and whether you agree with their commands or directions, you follow them. You know, had this young man gotten on the sidewalk like he was told to, the question, would he still be here today? Versus, you know, talking back, or why are you in the street in the first place? We always teach our kids not to play in the street. So, you know, when it comes to police authority, you know, you make your hands visible, do not put them in your pockets, you follow their instructions, do not try to, especially if the police come across aggressive, try to question them or match them anger with anger because you feel that you've been done wrong. Just obey. So those are some of the things that I have instilled in my children, and I can say, you know, I've got a 19-year-old that is struggling with authority and following directions and things like that. And I know that I have taught him right from wrong, but kids are going to make their decisions, and where there's an action, there's a reaction. And unfortunately, you know, that reaction was death. You know, so I can't say that it is 100% it's not the parent. I don't blame his parents at all, because Mike Brown, I believe he knew right from wrong, at least walking in the street. Now what happened, you know, and it's a twofold case. What happened to him is definitely unjustified and horrible. But the second part is following directions and doing what you're told to do and making your own conscious decisions, and not rolling the tape thinking that it would cost him his life.
Exactly. Sean, let me ask you, when as a black man, and, you know, kind of looking back as going, you know, when you grew up, and comparing it to what our young men and our boys are facing now, what do you think? Just comparing the climate, you know, back to, you know, way back when you were growing up, Sean, way back then. what is some advice that you might give to a young man, you know, with regards to saving themselves? Because I'm with Tiffany. I agree. As parents, we can only do so much. In cases like Mike Brown, you know, in my personal opinion, he was the police officer was definitely in the wrong. And we've seen other examples of that. But at the same time, what information would you say to a young man that you might be mentoring, or maybe a nephew or a friend's son, to just that piece, a nugget to that might help them to deal with the situation and to not let, because we can all get heated in the moment, but to not let that heat in the moment ruin their life for them?
Yeah, you know what? And the thing about it is, back in the ancient of days, you know, those old days, we had a lot more male mentorship. I'm not going to paint a rosy picture in that every, you know, home had, you know, the mom and the dad were together, because that's not true. But I think there was a lot more connectedness, a lot more family bonding. And so you had the uncle, you had the cousin, you had the older men who would speak words of wisdom into the young men. And I think we've lost a lot of that. I'm so glad Jasmine said that, because I think one of the quickest things we do, especially in our community, the Black community, is we are really quick to jump on the parents. I mean, it's like, oh, they should have done this and they should have done that. And yes, there are bad parents out there. And yes, we can be more attentive. They can be more attentive and things like that. But these are still individuals. These are still little adults. Grown people make bad choices, and it has nothing to do with their parenting. Has nothing to do. These are they're individuals, and they make bad choices. And yes, sometimes those choices are lethal, and it shouldn't be like that. But we shouldn't be so quick to point our finger at, you know, always at the parent. Now, having said that, I will also say that I think it is important for when I'm talking to young men, and thankfully God has blessed me to be in a position at a job with a Fortune 100 company where I can speak to young African-American men. And I see a lot of young men come through, and I can kind of mentor them and encourage them in the ways to go. And yes, you need to take this course over that course. And it makes me feel good on a lot of levels, and to the degree where I said, man, I wish I would have had someone mentor me like that, someone come along and give me that type of wisdom. And one of the things I share with them is you really want to make sure that you are focused on your goals. You want to make sure, because there's so many distractions, there's so many things that can pull you away from living your life, and, you know, really don't. You know, I was talking about this with someone else, and I said that I think what we need are more classes and courtesy. I think that's what we're missing. And I know it may sound trite and like, well, you know, that's that touchy feely stuff, but I really believe that, you know, we have missed the boat when we talk about, you know, just the little courtesies. And now it's become so much of an issue of respect and, oh, you stepped on my foot, and so now I've got to kind of get back at you, when before you just let those things go. And that's what I encourage, that let that go. Hey, a year from now, it won't even matter. It won't. No one can take your respect from you. Oh, he disrespected me. No. He doesn't have your respect. He doesn't, you know, control that. You control that. And that's what I share with them. Let things go. A year from now, it's not going to be a big deal. It's not going to be important. Let that person have whatever they, little, you know, kingdom they want to have. And I think that's the key. But I see so many of our young men that are just in pain and they're hurting. And I'm not here to beat up single moms. And so that's certainly not this show. It's not what I'm about. I think it's, we need more men to step up, to give back, to be part of Big Brothers, and, you know, to be part of churches where there's a strong mentoring program that's structured. And, you know, I think that's really what we're missing, is that as we look in Jewish communities and in other communities, there's a structure to lead young men into adulthood, where with us in our community, unfortunately, there's lacking that structure. I mean, it's just, they're just kind of thrown to fend for themselves, and unfortunately, too many times they make the wrong choices.
Exactly. Hey, and Jasmine, not to leave the girls out, I want to ask you, as the expert, what about our little girls? Because we, you know, especially as of late, we hear a lot about our boys because of everything that's been been pushed into the media. But our girls, our adolescent girls, our young ladies, they're also going through issues. You know, the bullying is just as prevalent for them. Fighting is horrific. In even gangs and a lot of stuff that they're dealing with on top of just being normal kids, you know, because that's just a segment of the population. Not all of them are dealing with things to that extreme. But what about our girls when they're seeing images that are either sexualized or everyone's being called B, you know, how do we reinforce the positive for our Black girls so that they value themselves and they understand that their worth extends beyond the visual or what's trendy?
I would agree with Sean the same thing for our girls as well, is that, you know, we need those mentorship programs. Our girls are mimicking society behavior and their parents' behavior. If you look at the young ladies that are, you know, in these type of situations, the parents aren't too far off sometimes, is what I'm finding as far as the young female population. So we need mentoring programs. We need to talk to them. I think that a lot of parents, in my observation, in my own home and having conversations, is that parents treat their boys differently than our girls. There's a lot more expectation in areas where we're lenient with our boys. So I really think that we as parents need to reflect on if we do have a boy and if we do have a girl, what is the difference? Is there a difference? Talk to them and see how they feel. I had a conversation with my daughter and my son, and she felt that I treated her differently. But they have the same curfew. You know, they have the same expectations in school and everything. So some of it is that, you know, we do treat our children, the sexes differently, and then some of it is that I'll speak from personal experience. I know my daughter observes me as her mother working hard, and, you know, she has seen the struggle. We have been homeless before, and so some of that she's acquired that she feels like it's her responsibility to take on that parenting role. Excuse me, and I have to, for lack of a better word, put her back in her place and help her understand, no, this is not your responsibility. You are a child. You know, I don't let my children parent each other, you know, like bossing each other and giving them instructions, especially my girls, because they start formulating that mother role. So, you know, in conversations, being a positive example in your own home, because it all starts at home, letting them know that they're beautiful. You can't tell your kids how much you love them or how handsome or pretty they are enough. There's just no such thing. In doing so, and correcting them, I know that sometimes they're being helpful or trying to be helpful, but still letting them know that they are a child, and this is what children do.
Okay, you breezed over it really quickly, but you mentioned something very, very personal to you, and you said that you and your family have been homeless before, and you can tell me to mind my business, mind my Black business. But that's very profound, and I can see how that fits into what you're doing now for your profession. But I want to ask you a personal question, if you don't mind. Having come from having your children, you and your children having gone through being homeless for a period of time, And because we have a lot of black children who are living in poverty. They are living in extreme poverty on up to, you know, whether it's state aid or whatever. But how do we as parents, how do we as community members, how do we as human beings, how do we deal and how do we make sure that we're approaching children who are going through things like that in a healthy manner, in a way that is uplifting and positive? Because, you know, we grew up broke. Fortunately, we were never homeless, but we did grow up on state aid. You know, I saw the big blocks of cheese, quite honestly, a lot, way too much for my own good. You know, a lot of Christmas presents did not come from mom. So, you know, I've been on that side of the block. You know, and I know that there was a certain amount of self-esteem issues that played into it for me, because you know that this pair of shoes you get at the beginning of the school year, that's it. You know, if you got holes in the bottom, oh, well, you get to touch summertime by the time school year is over, but with the bottom of your shoes. So how as parents and community members and relatives and so on and so forth, how do we help children with, you know, dealing with financial issues and self-esteem issues as they relate to that? How do we work with those kids? How do we help them to understand that, you know, that's not it? That doesn't define you, and there's a lot greater for you. You just got to, you know, it's just, you're just in a place right now.
Like you said, those kind words and that reassurance that this is just temporary, programs being set up for kids to give them that exposure. You know, a lot of these programs do take money. Some of them offer scholarships and things like that. And the parents need to ask, you know, if they offer a scholarship. Even those that don't, you know, when we were homeless, even those programs that didn't offer scholarships, once you explain your situation, they were more than happy to let you in. So it's a give and take. You know, it was very, I was very prideful, and it was very embarrassing, you know, to be homeless, especially when I was raised in an upper middle class and, you know, leave home and now I'm homeless with three kids. You know, how embarrassing is that? So swallowing, it's not even a matter of swallowing your pride, but you've got to get through your pride and ask for help, because no one, you could have all the systems and community groups in the world, but no one knows how to help you unless you tell them. So it's a give and take in sharing your situation, and you don't have to disclose everything, but enough to get the help that you need, because there are programs out there. I wish there were more programs, because I knew that I didn't want to be homeless. I knew that this is not where I belong for me or my kids. So I searched for programs, and they're scattered everywhere, but I was determined to find those programs and just ask. So and one thing that I realized in being homeless is don't treat them any different. I didn't like that, and maybe some like it, but I didn't like the feeling sorry for me or catering to me, because then that just made me feel even more different than those that were around me. So it made me very self-conscious of, oh, my God, does the lady next to me know that I'm homeless? Or, you know, do the kids' schools know that they're homeless? And you know, or the kids in the school, are they going to go back to the parents and say they're homeless? So not treating them any different than what you would a child with a home.
I think that when we go through things in life, there is always a teaching moment, you know, regardless of what your faith, your religion, your spiritual belief is. I think, you know, even looking at it just real world perspective, there's always a teaching moment in whatever you've gone through, especially when it's something as profound as being homeless. As a parent, what did you find that teaching moment, and how did you use it to teach to parent your kids? How did you show them what that what lessons, if any, came out of your station in life at that time?
Of course, at that time, I did not see a teachable moment.
Well,
nor
no,
was
not
I
then.
Really looking for a teachable moment. But, you know, now the kids, my two older ones, they do remember being homeless. And so they know to work hard, you know, for what they want. They also know that the sky is the limit, that, you know, that what's before them isn't the end-all, you know, be-all, end-all for them. So, you know, my daughter has graduated a year early from high school. She just started her own clothing line. She knows what she wants, and she's going for it. So that teachable moment came later, of course, but they know hard work, and they have such a spirit of compassion and giving, because they were there before. So they won't hesitate to offer words of encouragement or offer ideas and suggestions. I think I'm rearing little coaches, honestly, because they've been there. So they understand what, you know, their friend or the next person might go through or are going through.
With this, where you all are now, starting all over the place, I'm so sorry, with where you all are now, which is, you know, a much better station in life, but better time in life, do you ever have to, or do you, or maybe you don't even want to, do you ever have to remind them of what it used to be? Or is that even a good, you know, is that something that parents should even, you know, remind children of? Like, when you haven't gone through something like that, is that something that, you know, you say, well, remember, it could be, or do you let a child get past that and get over it and get past it?
For me personally, I do. We do have conversations on when we used to be homeless, but they are positive conversations in that, you know, yeah, this is where we were, but look how hard we worked together. You know, look how we stuck together to overcome this. So whatever trials and tribulations that we might face now, and I'm facing many trials and tribulations and right now as we speak, and my kids are my constant reminder of, Mom, you know, we've been here before, or we've been in tough predicaments, not necessarily homeless, you know, because that's not where we are right now, but we're in a tough predicament. And my daughter will come back to me and remind me, Mom, we've been in tough predicaments before. We're going to get through this together, and we're going to, you know, encourage each other and remember how you used to do this for us when we were in that situation. So I think it's good to remind them in a positive light, you know, because it helps continue the appreciation. It reminds them of the hard work that has been instilled in them, and that, you know, that you can overcome tough obstacles no matter what they are.
Okay. When we think in terms of success for kids, you know, and in the title of the show, are we raising successful kids, or are we setting our kids up to be successful? What do parents need to keep in mind when we think of success and successful kids? You know, because I don't think that's a canned anything for anyone. So what are some things you tell your parents when in reference to the success of their child, or whether or not they've been successful in raising successful children?
Ooh, that's a really good question. And, you know, I know that I've repeated that I'm going through tough times right now, and that's a very challenging question for me, and I'll share with you real quick. I have a 19-year-old son who I've brought up
you know, mentioned in this conversation before, and I recently found out 4 days ago that my son is addicted to meth. And so that has been a blow to me and my family. And so when you ask that question, you know, I will direct it towards me. Have I been a successful mother in rearing my son? Absolutely. What does that success look like for me? Of course, I would have never imagined, choosing my path, you know, my son choosing a path of drugs to be successful. Of course, we want our children to go off to college and get good jobs and, you know, things like that. But we can't define our child's success as our success. When you've done all that you can do and you can't do any more, that is my success for me. And I know that I have instilled in all of my children right and wrong. I know that I've taught them, you know, obedience and disobedience and making sound decisions for themselves. And so for me, I have been a successful parent, regardless of what my children choose as to walk their path in life. And so I haven't had to share that story with my other parents before because this is so new, but I have shared, you know, when they define success or being a successful parent, we often equate our success to the success of our children. We shouldn't do that. When you've done all that you can do and you have peace with it, then I think that you have accomplished successful parenting.
I agree. And I appreciate your transparency because that's a lot to go through in such a short period of time and then share publicly. So I definitely appreciate that. And with that, let me ask you this from a professional perspective. And again, you can tell me mama business. But with that, and I know that, you know, for you that it's, you know, sharing your experiences as a parent and using them as teaching moments for your clients, that's why you're that's part of your transparency. But do you think that some people will look at you professionally and think, well, you know, have negative recourse by you sharing your own experiences? Have you worried about that any?
I have worried about it, you know, on on a few occasions, on people questioning my expertise when my child is making horrible decisions. I have questioned it. I've debated on whether I would share, you know, personal stories or not because I didn't want anyone. But I think that me being authentic, me being transparent and saying, you know what, yes, this is my profession, but my first calling is I'm a human. And I'm not going to do everything right. My children aren't going to do everything right. And so to share my story in my profession, I have gained a lot more respect because I'm relatable. I'm realistic. I'm human. You know, I don't present myself as a know-it-all or that I don't go through problems, which I think more people than not appreciate that about me. And if they don't appreciate it, the most important thing is I love that about me, that I am able to. And I had to work through some pride because it was embarrassing. I was like, oh, my God, you know, these people are going to think that I don't know my stuff because my son is running amok. But I switched that and said, you know, I have a story to tell, and here's my story. And here's, you know, how I can relate to you because I've been there. I've done that, or I'm going through it. So it has been a worry, but it's less of a worry as I continue to move forward because my desire is to help help others, and I'm transparent and relatable.
Okay. Different question. Different. Slightly different bit. When it comes to parenting, we, you know, like Sean mentioned briefly, you know, the ideal is, you know, the whole. Well, I'm gonna say good times because I'm not gonna mention anything that's not. But you know, even in good times, they had both parents in a household. How important is it to have both parents? You know, like divorce rates are. I don't know the numbers, but you know, divorce isn't the numbers aren't the greatest anymore. So we have a lot of people who are having children out of wedlock, and we actually talked about this on another show some time ago that the dynamics of relationships have changed too. But how important is it for both parents to be maybe not in the household, but in children's lives? And how do parents? What do you tell your parents when they're co-parenting, and whether it be through divorce or, you know, by choice, what are some tips that you can give to those who have to co-parent?
I think it's very important to have for children to have both of their parents in their lives if it's possible. You know, my daughter's father passed away, so that's just not possible. So, but if it's possible, I think it's important for children to have both parents in their lives. When I am teaching co-parenting, I encourage, you know, both parents to, at some point in time, they liked each other enough to make this child. So they need to find that other parent's good points and celebrate those good points. Versus finding everything wrong with that parent and understand why the parent, who the parent is as an individual. I know that, you know, again, through that dating phase, I'm sure they've shared their stories of their childhood. So that'll help you better understand why, you know, the other parents the way they do. I know that my kid's father, you know, I just don't like some of the decisions that he makes, but knowing his story, I understand it. And so I try to nurture the strengths. So, you know, I'll say he was reared to where he would get spankings if he got anything, a C or below, until he brought up that C. Well, I don't believe that he should do that with our kids. So I'm the one that will go to the parent-teacher conferences and have conversations with the teachers and figure out what we can do if we're in that predicament, because I know that that is his upbringing, and I know that doesn't, you know, is not agreeable to me. So meeting each other where you are and compromising on what will best benefit the children, having conversations. If you can't have conversations, then text or email or, you know, some type of lines of communication. Honestly, I have him blocked from my cell phone. So we text each other, and that's what works for us. The kids are happy. You know, they get to see both of their parents. And so just understanding our backgrounds of our upbringing, their upbringing, and complimenting versus complaining will get you a lot further. And doing what's in the best interest of the kids versus hanging on to what made that relationship fall apart. I think we end up using the kids as pawns instead of doing what's in their best interest. So figuring out how to let it go, how to forgive yourself and the other parent for the dissolve of that relationship and talking to the kids and allowing them, if they're old enough, you know, now it's to a point in our house where the kids are old enough to make their requests. And if it's realistic and doable, then, you know, We don't have a problem working together to see that, you know, if they want to see Dad more often, we try to make that work.
Okay. Well, we are just about out of time, but I want to thank you. First of all, I want to thank you because you really just brought it there with your transparency and how much you've shared with the audience tonight, because I know I'm not even going through, but I know that that has to be a lot to go through as a mother, as a parent, and, you know, as someone who, you know, is that, that's what you do, you know, it's kind of as a life and parenting coach, that's what you do. And I think anyone else would have let their ego take over and kind of swept it under the rug, but you've used it as, I think, a great teaching moment for all of us, because you're right, no matter what we do with our children, they are still going to make their own, they're still going to make their own decisions, their own choices, good, bad, or indifferent. So I really appreciate your transparency with that. I appreciate you coming on the show, because it's parenting, especially within the Black community, is something that we need to talk about. We need to have that open conversation with. We need to have that open conversation about. So it's great to have someone who can come on and remind us that it's an investment in our children, and but we're at the same time, we're all human, so we have to keep that in mind. So I appreciate it. And before we close out, though, I wanted to give you one more chance, if any parting words, and then let us remind us how we can get a hold of you if anyone wants to talk to some Coach Jasmine.
Yeah, I want to thank you and Sean again for sharing your platform with me and allowing me to share my knowledge and my personal experience with your listeners. Again, my name is Jasmine Peters. My website is www.parentingwellnesscenter.com, and Facebook is Parenting Wellness Center, and for a free 15-minute consultation, you can call me at 720-343-9081.
All right, Jasmine, well, thank you so much. Well, Sean, I know you alluded to a few things that you wanted to share with our audience, or some things that you wanted to share with our audience tonight. So I'm going to hand it back over to you and then let you enlighten us.
All right, and you have done a wonderful job, and let me just once again co-sign on what you said and thank Jasmine for, one, being here with us, and two, for her transparency. It's so wonderful to hear somebody who's gone through some things, who's not talking from the mountaintop and, you know, talking down into the valley. They're in the valley with you, and they know, and so that lends to their credibility to me. I think there was one person said, I don't follow a general that doesn't have some scars. I don't follow somebody that doesn't have some battle wounds. You got to be able to prove that you've been through some things, and I think that's really, really wonderful. So to me, it just adds to her credibility. So, Jasmine, thank you so much. And boy, I tell you, if I could have produced or thought of a better way to bring this home, then I couldn't have thought of a better way for this show to have a guest here that just brought that home. And of course, we're always concerned about our kids and their welfare, and so that is great. Well, the announcement, without further ado, the announcement that I want to make to our audience is the show is going to go on a little bit of a hiatus. The business is taking off. It's really doing well, and my time is just really stretched in, you know, so many different directions. And I know for me to be true to myself, I have to be focused and dialed in, and to give this show the quality that it deserves, I just wouldn't be able to do it. And so we're going to go a little bit of a hiatus. So just keep your ear to the ground. We'll kind of, you know, let you know what's going to happen about when we'll be coming back and what form we'll be coming back in. But I just cannot say enough how humble and how grateful I am, and that Louisa, you have spent some Tuesday nights with me, that we have hung out, and the blessing to me of this whole thing, and this is the beauty of Facebook for me, is you get to meet some incredible people. You get to meet some people that you hope will be in your life for the rest of your life, because they're so good and they're so credible and they just bring so much value to your world that you don't ever want to let them go. And I just thank you. Once again, thank you for spending your Tuesday nights with me, for hanging out with me, for taking time away from your loved ones and your business and your family. And like I said, it's not the end. It's just taking on a different version. So, you know, just I want to thank you. Have done such a great job on this particular show and on all the shows that you have just given such input. And I just, you know, I just want to say thank you. Is there anything that you want to kind of say to kind of sign off and we'll kind of be out of here and I guess let people get back on with their life?
Well, Sean, it's mutual. I appreciate and I thank you for inviting me on. Like you said, you know, with social media, the great thing is you connect with so many people and have the opportunity to meet people who are across the country, across the world. The irony is you and I are just across the street pretty much.
That's true. That's true.
You know, but it's been wonderful. You know, we've had some really great guests on, and I'm going to reiterate, this is just a hiatus. This is not a goodbye, but we've had some really
great
guests on. We've had, you know, some really great dialogue from business to networking to parenting. So it's really, I'm kind of glad that we're ending where we are. Well, we're going on break where we are because we're coming to a close, a temporary close, on such a high and having had such great dialogue. So I am definitely not going anywhere. You're stuck with me for life, guy. And I encourage everybody to reach out to you. I know Facebook is, that's your place. So if anybody is interested in connecting with you further, I encourage them to, and I hope you'll share your Facebook information. I encourage them to connect with you because, as your Facebook buddy, I know you're always dropping some really great nuggets. I know with the new business venture, I know you have some great plans for that, and that'll be a great way for everyone to keep up with what you're doing and to see when you're going to reemerge, so to speak, with all of your new ventures and bringing the show back, whether it's here or in a different format. So I hope you'll share your contact information, social media information, so everyone will have the same pleasure as I do to be able to connect with you in that format for the temporary. But really just thank you. I appreciate it. I know that this platform has been a great help for me with Mind Your Black Business, which is still very much in its infant stage. But I've connected with some great professionals. I've met some great experts and just really made some really good friends to show with you. And for that, I thank you for that opportunity, and I thank you for your friendship.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Like I said, I'm just humbled that we have been able, you and I, and that we have been able to play a little part in getting out the word out about some businesses, getting the word out about some nonprofits. And we didn't socialize anything. We came, we brought value, and I hope that if anybody knows us, that they know our heart is to really provide value and to provide quality from people and to provide a better life. And you know, hey, like I said, my home is Facebook, but I'm going to be branching out into some YouTube videos. So just kind of check me out on there, stepping out, getting out that comfort zone. And I encourage anybody else to do that for their business and for their life. Is whatever you're challenged at, whatever you have a challenge, just step out. Just step out your comfort zone. You're going to learn something new. You're going to get some great, great, great growth in that area. And, of course, my Facebook page is Getting Skinny and Wealthy. That's my Facebook page. So you can look me up there, and you will see me smiling and looking happy. And one of the things I'll be smiling about most is my friendship with Louisa. Well, I could stay here all night and I could start crying and all that good stuff. But as you said, you know, just humbled to be able to share this platform with you and everybody out there. We're praying for you. I know Louisa's heart. She knows my heart. We're praying for you. We want to hear those success stories. We want to hear your victories and your challenges and things that you've overcome. And thank you, Jasmine, for your heart. And like I said, we could not have picked a better guest to kind of, you know, bring this in for a landing. And thank you so much. And we thank you for your transparency. We thank you for your honesty. because if there's been any essence of this show at all, that's what it's about. We're honest here, and we don't pull any punches. And so we're just going to pray blessings over you and your family, whatever you're going through. I just want you to know that this show is supporting you, and we'll always be here for you, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it, kiddos. Well, we're going to bring this in because I said if I keep doing this like that pastor that keeps saying, okay, I'm almost done, we'll be here for another 20 minutes. So we're going to bring this in for a landing. Thank you so much for everybody that's been a part of this, that has made this so special for me and Louisa. You're always in our heart. And as we said, we're not going away. We're just going away for a little while, but we will be back. And as we always say as well, be black, buy black, and build black. Have a wonderful night, everybody.